real change for our children and our future.
Jeff! Justy! Oi!
Back off the kid, you prick!
Yes! Yes! Oi, I'm going to get the child!
Look, he's dead! He's hurt the child!
You're all on camera, mate. You're all on camera.
Because today, I can announce that the government will ban access to social media for all children under the age of 16.
Could you please put your hands up, those of you who welcome the ban. Hands up for those who welcome the ban. So this just gives you an idea. I think it's pretty fair to say that most of these students there, 11 to 14, most are pretty disappointed with the ban. Let's just come over to you, Isabella. Tell me how you felt when you heard the Prime Minister say no more social media for you.
I didn't think it would actually happen. I kind of believed that he'd chicken out of it and give it more time or more consideration, but he seems pretty sure of it, and I'm not sure if I agree with him.
Government is always about choices, and it's clear to me that a full ban is the right choice. Now, I come to it as a parent myself. I know exactly the fears that we all feel when we're thinking about this issue.
A shadowy secret spy unit inside the government is being accused of being used as a propaganda tool to control the public. This has been spoken about a couple of times before, but I don't think anyone has broadcast it nationally. And if it's true, it is terrifying.
You know, all I've ever wanted for my own children, hand on heart, is for them to be happy and for them to be safe.
In a brazen power grab disguised as child protection, UK Prime Minister Keir Starmer has unleashed one of the most authoritarian digital lockdowns in Western history, banning all under 16s from major social media platforms like TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, YouTube, X, and beyond. Oddly enough, Starmer will not be banning the leftist toxic cesspool Blue Sky. This so-called Australia Plus regime, set to roll out by spring 2027, demands invasive age verification, facial scans, digital IDs, and big tech enforcement backed by multi-million pound fines. While Starmer preens about shielding kids from his bloated harms.
These days, kids have to find their feet in a world that changes so quickly, where technology intrudes into every area of their lives. And we know that harms them.
So, the social media thing with Keir Starmer, not 1% of me thinks this is coming from a good place. He's not helping kids in education. He's actively closing schools and limiting opportunities to kids. He is actively giving companies money to give jobs to young people from abroad rather than young kids in the UK when we're seeing record levels of youth unemployment. He's not helping kids get fitter. There's no more sports in schools. He's not helping them with good nutrition and advice. He's always pushing medication.
The real endgame screams louder than any TikTok algorithm, eroding parental authority, funneling youth toward state-approved echo chambers, and paving the way for broader censorship under the guise of protecting the vulnerable. Time to wake up, Western civilization. This is the soft tyranny of the nanny state morphing into full digital Orwellian dictatorship. John Bowne reporting for the Alex Jones Network at alexjoneslive.com.
We are unified by our spirit that God made and our connection to the Creator and the universe and our children. And this is the genesis point of the new revolution of information.
I will always believe and I will always say in public that Alex Jones is the most extraordinary person I've ever met.
I'll tell you, that f***ing guy.
A lot of times.
Alex has been right on for over a decade.
Fluoride, just like Alex Jones was saying, not good. It's crazy.
The real war's here with the globalists and Soros and Obama and the New World Order and BlackRock.
AlexJones.network is tomorrow's news.
The InfoWar is not gone. It has been reborn. AlexJonesLive.com is the new site to find the next step in the InfoWar. Articles, video reports, live streams, breaking news. It's all on AlexJonesLive.com. We need you to be the Paul Revere's and share the links. You can also find us on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble at rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. And don't forget to download the app. Go to alexjonesapp.com. The fight continues. If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.
AlexJonesLive.com. We've only just begun to fight.
In the southern part of Texas, in the town of San Antonio, is a fortress all in ruins that the weeds have overgrown. You may look in vain for crosses and you'll never see a one, but sometimes between the setting and the rising of the sun, you can hear a ghostly bugle as the men go marching by. You can hear them as they answer to that roll call in the sky. Colonel Travis.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is the Alex Jones Show. I'm your host, Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex today. We're going to be joined by Carl Benjamin, a.k.a. Sargon of Akkad, later in this hour. So I'm going to take a break from talking about the rape gang inquiry, since that is what we're going to be talking about once he joins us, to talk about some other pretty interesting developments in the world today. Looks like there's some developments as well about the Iran conflict, with Iran demanding Israel get out of Lebanon. Again, we're rushing towards an ultimate conflict here, and I honestly do not know which way it's going to go. All hope rests on Donald Trump's shoulders, whether he can stand up to and, in fact, restrain Israel's military activity. We'll see. We shall see. Should actually be an easy solution. It should just be, well, we made this agreement with Iran. We're not responding. Good luck, you guys. Good luck, Israel. You want to stay in Lebanon? Have fun fighting Iran. Like, that's just how it should be. But I want to talk about this from Wired. Leaked expose, or leak exposes, members of Peter Thiel's secret dialogue society. More than 200 of the world's elites registered for a retreat whose agenda runs from panels on cult building and sex to prepping for World War III. An associated app offers matchmaking. These are these elites. These are our elites. These are the people that run the world. They're all just awful. Like, that's what they're talking about? Sex cults in World War III. It's like, no wonder nothing positive ever happens. Ever as a result of these people. A trove of internal records from a secret society for powerful figures in U.S. politics, finance, and tech was left exposed online, Wired has confirmed, naming participants in its events and revealing sensitive personal data they were assured would stay private. The group, called Dialogue, is a private invitation-only organization co-founded in 2006 by billionaire tech investor Peter Thiel. It convenes U.S. officials, foreign government figures, and Silicon Valley executives at off-the-record annual retreats. Dialogue has spent two decades declining to disclose its members. A directory on the website's code was first revealed by Swiss hacktivist Maya Arsene Crimo. Known for exposing the U.S. government's no-fly list and breaching the surveillance camera company Verkada, Crime W, I'm not sure how to pronounce that, Crimu, tells Wired the directory surfaced via anonymous tip. Wired independently verified its contents. A source separately provided Wired with the registration list for Dialogue's 2026 retreat, which names 222 people and records what the list describes as each resident's membership status and attendee type, including active member and guest. The retreat is scheduled for August 12th through 16th at a venue near Dublin, Ireland. The same data lays out a program of off-the-record sessions, including, quote, money does buy happiness. Yeah, it's just like, oh, gee, I wonder why everything is terrible. It's like the world elite are getting together to be like, money actually is the answer to all of the problems, and we should bring about the Antichrist. And what if World War III was kind of a good thing, actually? What if we could use it to our ends? It's like, well, this is why we don't like secret societies. This is why we do everything we can to destroy secret societies. So money does buy happiness, they say. Bring back nuclear. I actually agree with that. Navigating World War III. Navigating World War III. Not stopping, not preventing, not the horrors of, but navigating, you know? Navigating. Like, yeah, we're going to start World War III. We're going to be the main motive drivers behind the conflicts that spiral into World War III. We need to know how to make the most of this. Really get the most bang for our buck. Battlefield Technologies, end quote, how's your sex life? Other talks include Build a Cult, moderated by the founder of Christian networking site Pray.com, and Build a Party, run by former White House national security official. Together, alongside the mundane fare of typical thought leadership conference, the documents show an extraordinary convergence of power. The registration records list General Alexis Grinewich, NATO's supreme allied commander. Allied Commander of Europe and head of U.S. European Command, who took the post in July 2025 and is recorded on the leaked list as having attended dialogue conferences since 2021. The website directory names sitting Trump administration officials, two U.S. senators, six members of the PayPal mafia, a former Middle East chief of intelligence, and a sitting ambassador to the United States, along with founders and directors of many of the country's largest surveillance, data broker, and advertising data companies. Yeah, this is what we call the world government. This is what we reference as the, you know, corporate aristocracy, the unelected corporate power structure that is currently frantically, feverishly working to solidify and make permanent their unelected and unjustified control over the lives of average people. It's also a little bit coincidental, I guess. I'm not sure what you'd call it, that actually in the Epstein files, there's a time in which Peter Thiel and Epstein are discussing creating a secret society. So that's kind of interesting. You also have Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale, who, of course, made news this week when he demanded that the identity of a 19-year-old be exposed for daring not to like the Jewish people, which, again, is sort of terrifying when you consider the power and access that Palantir has in his increasing continuously access to medical records and everything else they could use to blackmail and destroy you. And they apparently see that as an appropriate response to mild disagreement or personal dislike. Absolutely horrifying. Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale, Jewish supremacist, whose software runs case management for U.S. Customs and Immigration and Customs Enforcement and data fusion for the Pentagon and intelligence community, is listed on the same society as Army Secretary Dan Driscoll and Representative Jim Himes, the ranking member of the House Intelligence Committee, which oversees agencies Palantir contracts with. Palantir is the operating structure of the New World Order. These people, these organizations, these big tech companies are at this moment creating the foundation for the one world government with them in charge again forever. And you saw this with things like Donald Trump's big trip to China earlier this year, in which he didn't bring along congressmen and senators and representatives of the American people. He brought along big tech corporate masters. Because that's who's actually running things. Kind of like how when the president of Japan comes and visits America, yes, she has a state dinner at the White House, of course, she's kind of obligated to do, but the main work is done meeting with Miriam Adelson and Alex Karp and Mark Zuckerberg and all of the unelected, self-appointed overlords who were placed in their position, usually with the help of NQTEL and the CIA. Investment strategy. None of the individuals named in this story responded to Quest for Comment. Rafi Grinberg, who himself is listed as Dialogue's executive director on his LinkedIn profile, is the author of a self-help book called How to Be a Grown-Up. He didn't respond for a request for comment either. The registration records appear to show not only who belongs to Dialogue, but who attends. Of the 222 people who signed up for the 2006 retreat, according to leaked records, 87 are marked as first-time attendees. Others list histories stretching back more than a decade and a handful of the society's founding 20 years ago. None of the registrants, Gringwick included, used a government email address, all registered with personal or corporate accounts, placing their attendance outside the email systems subject to public record laws. It seems like it should be illegal. It seems like it probably is illegal, but they're going to do it anyway, and they're not going to be punished because of who they are. Well, ties the roster together more than any title or office is a shared preoccupation with artificial intelligence, longevity, and the near future. Asked on a sign-up form to predict the future, registrants returned again and again to the same theme, that AI will reorder work, war, education, and belief within a few years. Several foresee mass labor displacement and a swing back toward union and government programs. Others predict an AI winter, domestic terrorism targeting data centers, criminal defendants choosing AI lawyers over public defenders, or religious revival provoked by the disruptions. Societal degeneration, predicted one person, will continue to accelerate. Members also list talents like funhouse construction, whatever that means, accent imitation, backcountry skiing, urban exploration, and meditative and psychedelic inquiry into the nature of reality. Because the people that run our world are universally dorks. They're all dorks. It's like the dork world order, basically. And I don't get it because, you know, you would think people who'd accrued all of this incredible, inordinate power to themselves would be like charismatic and philosophical. They're really not, though. They're really all dorks. It's honestly worse. It's worse than if they were just like hardcore, like, I don't know, man. To me, it's like if you're, you know, goose stepping, you're going to like put a boot on my neck. It's like, whoa, that's what tyranny is supposed to look like. We've got tyranny by a bunch of sweater wearing dorks. We're like, I like urban exploration. What the hell does that? You don't go outside of your house. These people, man. One offers compassion and existential dread. Another, dinner parties, keeping secrets, and remembering birthdays. These are their talents. I'm really good at remembering birthdays. Cool. That's cool. Marcus, their book recommendations skew towards the canonical and optimization-minded. Marcus Aurelius and Milan Kundera, alongside Annie Duke's Thinking in Bets, Peter Attia's Outlive, and from at least one attendee, Thiel's Own, 0-1. Dialogue also plays matchmaker. Its participant form asks registrants whether they are, quote, looking for love, and offers to include single male, single woman, or other respondents in future matchmaking. A separate site, dating.dialogue.org, hosts an app pitched as a meaningful connection for exceptional people. Again, it's like there's nothing like illegal about doing this. It's just like, why are these the most powerful people in the world? What the hell is wrong with them? Also, you notice longevity, AI. Again, it's not that complicated. It's actually kind of simple. They really think they're on the cusp of living forever. These people really think that they're going to be the first group of people that are going to receive the life extension technology. Some of them probably have already. Said it before, I'll say it again. If you've ever had the chance to sit at a table with like multiple billionaires, I've had this experience. Do you know what they talk about? They talk about living forever. They talk about how they are already privy. They already know people who think they're going to live forever. I know somebody who said he wouldn't tell me the name and he wouldn't tell me any information about it. I tried to get him to. He was basically like, well, I know a guy who's 25 and he's been 25 for 5 years. Yeah, he invented a serum himself and, you know, he wasn't allowed to test it, but he's secretly doing it on himself. And he basically thinks he's frozen his age at 25 and he'll never get any older. There are already people out there who are already testing this on themselves, likely testing it on unwilling, you know, clones or whatever else they have squirreled away in their underground bunkers or in the wilds of Siberia or wherever else they can, you know, avoid detection from us regular people, but they think they're on the cusp of immortality, and they understand that that is an impossible thing to have in the way the world works right now, because you cannot have birth without death. That doesn't make any sense. So the only way for them to actually be able to enjoy what they think they've accomplished or on the cusp of accomplishing, essentially permanent life, right? They won't be immortal because they'll still be able to be killed. It's like in The Godfather, right? If there's one thing history teaches us, it's that everybody can be killed, but they'll naturally, they won't age, and they think they'll be able to live for a couple hundred years at least, maybe forever, but only if they first enslave the entire world in a, you know, permanent slave state system, so the people are actually happy. They're willing to participate in this and think that, oh, if I serve them well enough, I too will be lifted into their ranks and given the immortality tech. That's what this is about. Again, what ties the roster together more than any title or office is a shared preoccupation with artificial intelligence, longevity, and the near future. It's not that hard to put together what it's actually talking about. The forum also gathers sensitive answers, including each registrant's political leaning, which Dialogue promises will not be shared in the app or with other participants ever. That data and the matchmaking responses were exposed in the leak. The records sit in Airtable, a commercial database for each participant. Dialogue logs a membership status, every retreat the person has attended, a biography, a home city, a private access token. Wired is not publishing the tokens, which function as login credentials, or the personalized account links that contain them. The leaked registration list also includes senior figures absent from the public directory of 113. Randy Krosner, a former director governor of the Federal Reserve, who now serves in the Bank of England's Financial Policy Committee. Hallie Hoffman, a former general counsel and acting chief of staff for the Drug Enforcement Administration. Jonathan Greenblatt, the chief executive of the Anti-Defamation League. Paul Gottler, the president of the Cato Institute. Ryan Stowers, the executive director of the Charles Koch Foundation, and Roger Meyerson, a Nobel laureate economist for the University of Chicago. It also lists a cluster of Google and Google DeepMind executives, among them Tom Liu, who leads global affairs for the company's Frontier AI division, and working journalist Saud McKinnitt, a national security correspondent for The Washington Post. She's listed as running an event called the Ulysses Book Club. The rest of the membership spans hedge fund and private equity billionaires, current and former foreign officials, network television stars, best-selling authors, and religious leaders. One of several internal documents Dialogue left exposed on the same online database that held its registration records is a guide for event moderators, urging them to remind participants that everything is off the record and that comments should be concise and non-obvious. It also coaches them to model brief introductions to avoid status signaling in a room full of senators, dignitaries, and tycoons. The discipline imposed by the group did not extend to its website. The directory was embedded in a code of dialogue.org, a near empty page, and was served to any visitor who viewed the page's source. In a separate Dialogue page at app.dialogue.org presents a sign-in screen for Dialogue Global 2026 outside Dublin. The page invites any visitor to sign in by email or Google account and presents no terms of service, no notice that the application is restricted to members, and no indication that an invitation is required. So basically they're saying, it's okay that we hacked this, which I agree. I agree, even if they didn't want you to have all of these powerful people meeting together, deciding things in total secret is obviously counterproductive to running an open society, a republic at all. Dialogue is operated with little public footprint since its founding. It holds at least one retreat a year with assigned seating, moderated session, and a rule that nothing said is for attribution, which is also called the Chatham House rules. Is one of the main forms of this type of control. Past gatherings have been held at Ritz-Carlton Dove Mountain in Arizona and the San Clemente Palace in Venice, Italy, according to Axios, which first reported the group's plans for a campus in the Washington, D.C. area. It's been likened to a tech industry version of Bilderberg, the off-the-record gathering of Western political and business elites that they refused to acknowledge existed for the first several decades and only were forced to admit existed because of the proof that was provided by the likes of Alex Jones, who went to their meetings and filmed all of the business elite coming together. Because again, you know, this just keeps happening where it's like the first response is the appropriate one, where when people like Alex Jones come out and go, you know, there are these secret meetings where the world elite get together, the heads of countries, politicians, senators, kings and queens, media magnates, they get together and they coordinate in secret and they plan out the next year's events. And it's all off the record, and they all keep it totally under wraps. And the response to that was like, that's ridiculous. That's crazy. Because the assumption is, if anything like that was actually true, then we would kind of be obligated to like break it up, because that's illegal. Like, you can't have that. We, the people, are supposed to have control over our government. We can't have our government taking dictates from some unelected international cabal who does not have our interests in mind. And so they deny it. They say, oh, it doesn't exist. How could that exist? That would be so crazy and illegal. And yet it does exist, and we prove it exists. So then they go, well, yeah, of course it exists, but it's because we love you. Yeah, of course all of the billionaires and most, you know, powerful and influential people in the world get together in total secrecy on top of a mountain where no journalist is allowed within 100 miles. And we do it because we love you, and we're trying to, like, save the earth from climate change, guys. It's not that we're getting together in secret because what we're establishing is contrary to the well-being of you and your nation. It's because we actually are the smartest people, and we're the ones that need to dictate to you how to behave. And so we discovered that Bilderberg was in fact real. We exposed it to everybody. They had to admit it. They came out and said, yes, it's true, but it's because we're good, and we are doing it because we love you. And meanwhile, they're creating alternative secret societies to continue the secretive operation while keeping Bilderberg as a public-facing, seemingly benign gathering of psychopaths and weirdos. Accounts describe the retreats of around 100 participants. The 2026 registration list reviewed by Wired names 222. Public glimpses are rare. The statistician Andrew Gelman published one of Dialogue's invitations to his blog in 2022, describing its format and a registration fee of more than $16,000. The 2014 retreat grew renewed attention that year when an invitation forwarded to financier Jeffrey Epstein surfaced in the U.S. Department's release of the Epstein files. A Jeff Epstein appears on the attached list of past participants, but the person is actually the former CFO of Oracle, not the deceased sex trafficker. Okay, just the leader of another sort of CIA outgrowth surveillance and control operation, Oracle. Wonderful. Clash Report also has a story. Besant, Cruz, Musk, and Kushner among leaked member list of secret society. A massive data leak has exposed Dialogue, a secret society of over 200 global elites. The breach revealed an exclusive matchmaking app, as well as off-the-record retreat agendas covering global conflict, artificial intelligence, and controversial political strategies. The leak, encompassing private registration database and website code, revealed the existence of an exclusive matchmaking application for members. The leaked roster includes high-profile figures such as Elon Musk, Jared Kushner, Scott Bessent, Senator Ted Cruz, and Kaja Kallas. Records also name Army Secretary Dan Driscoll, Palantir co-founder Joe Lonsdale, and Strauss Zelnick, CEO of Take-Two Interactive, the video game company behind GTA 6, Grand Theft Auto 6. The document shows registrants uniformly used personal or corporate email accounts, thereby placing the communication strictly outside the scope of public record laws. So again, as we become more aware of this, just understand that things don't just happen. I'm just going to say that over and over. Things don't just happen. World events don't just suddenly occur. Nobody knew it was going to happen. It's like the dew on the grass in the morning. It's like the dandelions cropping up in your flower bed. No, these are actually very thought out, very well planned. They operate in total secrecy. You know, they set out agendas, then they pursue those agendas. Only they couch what they're pursuing in language that seems beneficial or beneficent to the people that they're actually exploiting or seeking to destroy. So, Navigating World War III. I think that title alone sort of tells you everything you need to know about it. That they're planning World War III. These are the guys that would do it. These are the ones that would get us into it, and actively are. And they want to know how to navigate it best, you know, to benefit best from it, so that they get out on the other side better off than when they went in. Not for us, of course. It'll be World War III. It'll be mass death, chaos, and misery. For us, not for them. Not for this secret society. Crazy stuff.
Here's three big announcements right now. We have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2023. 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition. And then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this, in the concepts, like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America, 250 years strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny to 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, Ride Fast, Live Free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 Free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the Deep State. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you really got to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. Hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com. New America's 250th birthday, limited edition, July 4th. Apparel now available. And right now, introductory, they're 30% off all apparel on the site, not just the America 250th birthday limited editions. It's only available for a month and a half. These designs are limited edition. TheAlexJonesStore.com. And we only sell you stuff that really empowers you because we want you to love it and be impressed with it. So we have a relationship with you. And so the only way you miss out is not getting our T3, our bovine colostrum, our ultramethylene red, our Shilajit, our Irish sea moss. They're all amazing. But if you do anything, methylene blue and the water filtration system, when you take this out of the box, I've never seen, I went and checked. It's the highest stainless steel there is. And it turned out it wasn't that much more. I mean, it was somewhat more, another 30% more to have this. But I mean, it's just standalone. Nobody's got anything even close to this. I congratulations, Bigley. I am very impressed. Very, very impressed. I know a winner when I see it. And this sexy beast is going to help so many people cut out all the garbage out of their water. One of the biggest things you can do, take control of your life. And it's going to fund this operation. So I am literally in love with this. It looks like Marilyn Monroe to me right now. I forget the term when you're attracted to like sports cars and objects. I've never been sexually attracted to like a sports car, though I thought they're cool. Never been sexually attracted to... I'm actually being a little sarcastic, but I'm not. I'm actually physically attracted to this right now, okay? This is... Because I know it's going to help people. I'm being silly. Actually, kind of not. What sexy is it's great. I know a home run when I see it, and I know this is just another big victory, so thank you so much for all you and your support and Bigley knocking out of the park.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
The Patriot's choice and globalist's dread. Welcome to the Alex Jones Show.
Welcome back, folks. This is the Alex Jones Show, AlexJonesLive.com. I'm Harrison Smith, sitting in for Alex Jones, joined by Carl Benjamin this segment. He, of course, is the director of LotusEaters.com, LotusEaters.com. And Carl, as I understand, the Lotus Eaters, some of your members actually had a hand in helping to compile the rape gang inquiry report that was just released. Is that right? And welcome to the show, of course. And what has been your response to this inquiry report recently published?
Yeah, hey Harrison, nice to see you again. Josh Firm was a contributor to it. I don't actually know what his role in it was, I'm afraid, but I understand he was a contributor to it. So you know, well done to him. And I mean my response is just like everyone's response. I've had to read. I mean it's 200 pages long, so I've only managed to get through half of it. And it is a brutal read. I've skimmed through the rest of it, so I'm aware of what it contains, critiques of Islam and whatnot. But the actual substance is in the witness testimonies, and these are just some of the most harrowing things you can imagine reading. I mean, they sound like, honestly, like some sort of perverse fiction. It's like, what's the worst thing that we can imagine happening to a person? Like Stephen King novel, actually. And we'll write that down and have that as the report. But unfortunately, I do tend to find myself believing them because it lines up with what previous investigations have found. And people have been asking, what's the need to do this inquiry? And it's because this inquiry is the first inquiry that wasn't bounded by concerns of political correctness. It's the first inquiry that wasn't taking the feelings of the Muslim community into account. And that's why this one comes across as so much more raw. And I'm trying to think of a nice way of putting this. Revealing, should we say, about what has happened and the depth of complicity of the community in it.
Yeah, complicity. I mean, the police are actually the ones carrying it out. The people running the care homes are obviously complicit. I mean, they're involved in it. And when you read this, again, it's not about the individual instances of horror, of which there are very, very many. And again, as you point out, I mean, one of the quotes I know you retweeted from one of the cases we were talking about earlier with this woman named Fiona. A police officer returned Fiona to the house where the abuse was occurring and told the men to, quote, have fun with her. Right? This is one of these examples of just like, is this a fiction? Is this, you know, some sort of, no, this is really what happened. But it's not about the individual instances. You read it and it's the description of a war. It's the description of a full-fledged assault by a giant army against the people of England that has gone on in total secret. And so it's not, you know, it's not about the individual instances, which are beyond horrifying, taken together. You read this and it's just every page. It's just this relentless outpouring of horrors, and the scale of it is so astronomical. I'm having trouble putting it in words, but clearly, I mean, this is a war against the people of the UK. I don't know how you can come to any other conclusion.
Well, you know, I think the war has already been lost. I think what this is the occupation. Mm-hmm. I think that the British Imperial State is treating Britain as essentially its final remaining, particularly England, treating as its final remaining colonial possession. And so it has brought in settlers, which is what it did elsewhere, and it is using the law to protect them and victimize the native population. It is something that you, if you read any literature about decolonization, particularly Frantz Fanon springs to mind in The Wretched of the Earth here, the cutting edge of the administration of the law cuts against the natives. It's always in favor of the settlers. It's always against the natives. And so this blade that is the law, which we flatter ourselves to say is applied evenly and equally, is very clearly being used expressly against the white working class of this country in favor of the settlers that have been brought here by the state. And the settlers are the wards of the state. They're the thing that the state is there to protect in an imperial colonial administration. The natives are, in fact, something of an obstacle, something of a burden, something of a resource to be abused. And in that particular case that you gave, it really sounds like the authorities are giving the girl over like a war trophy to be used and abused by the conquering settlers. I really have trouble reading that in any other way.
Yeah, absolutely. And again, it's like a cartoon of, you know, the worst possible, you know, actions of a colonial power going in and abusing the natives. But no, it's actually happening. It's only in reverse, this weird reverse colonization. And, you know, one thing I really appreciate about the work that you do, and it's sort of ubiquitous, and I've, of course, been following you for the last decade, is giving sort of the underlying philosophy behind why things are going on. Because we can look at something and go, wow, this is horrible. But you do a really good job sort of elucidating, like, what are the philosophical underpinnings of this that are actually driving the people doing it? And that's what I need right now, because as I look through this, you know, so often it's just, they don't want to be racist. And I really have trouble for that being a sufficient excuse for all of this going on? Is it really that bad to be called racist? And how did it get to that point? Help me to understand. Is it just the fear of racism? What's really behind this, do you think? Because, again, you just the horrors that are unveiled in this beggar a better explanation to me. And I'm turning to you to provide it, not to laugh at this. But it's just it's so outrageous. It's hard to do anything else. What is actually compelling the people engaged in this, do you think?
Well, I think you've got to remember that the United Kingdom is fundamentally an anti-racist state. It's in the law, it's in the attitude, and it's in the hearts and minds of the people who administer our country. The police, for example, in the Henry Novak case, Everyone saw that this was very clearly a case where, despite the man is dying on the ground, they took the word of the non-white settler over him saying, "I've been stabbed. I don't think you have, mate." Yeah. Well, then when you go back and explore, where does that attitude come from? Well, it comes from their explicit pledge and their anti-racist doctrine that is currently on their website. If you go to the Hampshire Police's website, you can find their anti-racist doctrine. And what they tell us is they're committed to being an anti-racist police force. And that doesn't mean treating every group the same. Right. In fact, it expressly means treating different groups differently because that's what's appropriate to them. And of course, in the case of what is essentially a settler colonial state in Britain, that means treating the settlers with privileges and treating the natives as, well, barbarians who are deserving of the fate that befalls them. And this comes from the top. It's been the case since probably the end of World War II that the liberal state has become more liberal over time. And this has manifested in what we call anti-racism, but what is more properly called intersectionality, in that the nature of the numerical disparities between cultures and between peoples in the United Kingdom or in your country, I mean, it came from America, this philosophy. The nature of the numerical differences is itself something that is a form of oppression. And so to get to equality, to get to equity, to get to the correct place, you actually have to treat the majority group with more, with less deference than you would treat the minority group. And this, of course, turns into a kind of aristocratic privilege that the minority groups inherit in the name of equality. And that's a very short history of how we arrived here and what is going through their minds. They think racism is worse than rape. They think it's worse than murder. They think it is the highest crime it is possible to commit.
And it took like decades of brainwashing to get people to that place, but it's so thoroughly baked in now, even when they're being called out for it, it's like the UK government can't help but continue this pattern. I know the most recent thing with the murder of Henry Novak is the murderer's brother who was right there and really actively participated in it, right? He's the one that made the 911 call.
No, sorry. He was expressly complicit. He was the one who phoned the police and lied to them that Henry Novak had racially abused them. And he was speaking to the police when they arrived and told them that he had been racist to them and that he was lying about being stabbed. He was expressly complicit. I mean, now this, I would have thought this would have counted as being an accomplice to a murder because he seems to have been an accomplice to a murder. And he was in the back of the police van talking in Urdu with his brother about how they were going to lie about this and cover it up. I guess they just didn't realize they were being filmed or something. But I've seen all of this footage. And if I've seen it, it's like, right, okay, well, he's definitely complicit. How is it that the police can't? Well, the answer is they're doing the bare minimum that they can to protect the privileged aristocratic settler group over the despised native group that is just free range, free game. Anything that is done to us is in some way deserved, is what the attitude that comes across is. And until the British people can actually find themselves to vote for a government that is actually in their interests, on their side, against the newcomers, then this will continue indefinitely.
Yeah, and so I guess the latest is that they've officially denied, actually charging him with anything, the brother. And you know, as you point out, I mean, he wasn't just complicit in it. If he had made a different choice, if he'd said, hey, this guy's been stabbed, you need to send an ambulance, Henry Novak might be alive right now. So, I mean, his actions directly contributed to the kid's death. And he's not being charged. So it's like even in this in this, you know, attitude of hyperfixation on the actions of the government, where everybody's criticizing them and the rape report is coming out. And you would think, even if it was just for self-preservation, they'd go, we better just charge this guy with something, maybe a slap on the wrist. But like, we got to let people know that we're not as bad as they say. But it's like they're advertising it. They're going, no, you know what? We're not going to charge him with anything. He's free to go. And frankly, we would have let his brother go too, but you guys figured out and posted on X. So actually, we're going to censor X now. I mean, they're so brazen. What gives them this confidence?
It's their true belief. It's honestly, obviously, the philosophy is nowhere near comparable to Christianity in its grace and dignity, but they're happy to be martyrs for it. They truly believe it. They honestly think, in the same way that you would die on the cross if, you know, you were called to, if you were martyred by the Romans or something, they genuinely believe this is the right thing to do. And it's the same with anywhere that this anti-racist philosophy is found. Like, for example, why would any company take massive economic hits for woke, right? The woke era has passed because they can't afford it anymore. But they want to. They were happy to eat the cost. They were happy to take the hits because they thought they were saving the world through representation, through anti-racist activism, all this sort of, you know, gay activism, all this sort of stuff. They were happy to take it. Now, like, from a capitalist perspective, this makes absolutely no sense at all. But from the position of a religious crusader whose zeal for righteousness is them healing the world, it makes perfect sense. And that's the only way it actually has a logical explanation. And then when you see them actively protesting against people who are like protesting for justice for Henry Novak's family, or sorry, I can't remember the guy in Northern Ireland who got his eyes stabbed out by a Sudanese man offhand, because these cases are just coming thick and fast. Right. Like the day afterwards, a 17-year-old girl was stabbed in the neck by a Pakistani man. I can't remember her name either. She survived, thankfully. But these atrocities are coming so thick and fast now, and we are so far outside of the protection of the law that it's just mad. It's just absolutely mad. And genuinely, I'm worried about living in my country. I'm genuinely afraid of going to a diversified area. I mean, the town centre in Swindon, where I live, was heavily diversified over COVID. This all happened from 2020 onwards. Before then, I lived in an English town. I live in an English town, and it was completely normal. And suddenly there is just a wave of people from all over the world, no one particular place, no one particular country, just this wave of people who have been saddled here, because, and I know the government must have put them here, because I'm absolutely sure that when they were living in a village in Sudan or Bangladesh or something, they'd never heard of Swindon. It's not exactly the most prestigious place in the world. The government must be putting them here. It must be paying for them to live here because they don't have jobs. And I'm genuinely worried about walking down the street now. You don't know when some lunatic is just going to come at you with a knife. And honestly, it's a horrible, horrible thing to happen, especially as my town. I lived here. I live here. I choose to live here. It's, you know, I'm successful enough. I could live anywhere I wanted. You know, I work via the internet, and I'm a successful YouTuber, and I have a successful business. So I could live anywhere I wanted, but I was very, very happy and comfortable in Wiltshire and Swindon because this was peaceful. This is one of those areas. This is the Shire. Nothing ever happened. And that's how I like it. I don't want drama. I don't want trouble. I want to raise my family and just have a nice, relaxing life, you know, play Warhammer with my friends, do nothing of any particular note outside of my work, you know, but I don't get to have that now. I get to live in modernity now. I get to live in the colonized state now. And all I'm saying is this is why I support Restore Britain, because it's the only political party in Britain that is going to do something about this.
Absolutely. And you know, the question that always jumps to my mind is like, what's wrong with everybody else? What's wrong with everybody else that's lived through this change and seems incapable of recognizing it, or at the very least acknowledging that, hey, it might have some downsides. I guess it makes sense. I mean, what you said, I mean, it is a religious fervor that they have. And it'd be like asking a Christian, like, well, there's some things that are bad about Christianity too, right? There's some things you don't like about Jesus. It's like, nope, we take all of it. So I mean, outside of the religious programming, it really doesn't make any sense. And but like, what do you think? Is it really? I don't know, man. I just have trouble. I have to have trouble rationalizing it where, like you, you've got tons of neighbors that have lived through this change as well. Are they really blind to it? Do they really think it's a good thing? Do they think it's just happening and nobody's in control of it and things are just occurring and you just have to deal with it? How do they rationalize it? And what is wrong with so many people that seem either fine with or actually in favor of the way things are going, even with all of the evidence, like in the inquiry report?
So one aspect of it is it's difficult to pinpoint the source of the problem. These things aren't administratively in your face. So if the government says, right, okay, we're going to let in 1 million-plus people a year, which they do, by the way. They were proud that they got the intake of immigrants into Britain down to 850,000 last year. 850,000 new people, mostly third worlders, are allowed to come and live in Britain every year. They're not necessarily permanently. Something like half of those are on permanent visas, and you know, 160,000, something like that, have got citizenship. But that's still 850,000 people who now need housing, now need jobs, now take up space in the infrastructure, and you don't know anything about. So who knows what their intentions are here? So that's the problem is these people just turn up out of nowhere and you just don't know how they got here. But suddenly they're all over the place. And what are you supposed to do about that? Like, what are your options? It's not clear where the problem is originating from. And so it's not clear what you should, where you should direct your ire. Moreover, because the country's changed so quickly and we still have a ruling class that is in hock to political correctness, it's not clear who you are supposed to complain to. I mean, I actually live just outside of Swindon now. I had to buy a bigger house because my family kept growing. So I actually live in just a small village outside of Swindon now. It's about a mile outside. And it's like 97% white English. And we still have a pride flag outside. I mean, the average age of my village is probably about 10 or 15 years older than me. I very much doubt there are very many gay people here. And yet we still have a pride flag flying outside on the town hall of my village. The powers that be are all people who believe in this stuff. And so it's not clear who you are supposed to protest to. And even then, when you do, it's not clear what you're supposed to ask them to do about it. Because, I mean, on an individual level, a lot of the migrants aren't themselves actually dangerous. It's only a minority of the migrants who are actually dangerous, who are actually doing something terrible. It's just the feeling of being unsafe in your own town now is that thing that pervades. Because, hey, most of the migrants are fine, but it only takes one to snap and then stab you in the neck. So you live under a kind of oppressive regime of fear. But that's hard to explain. Like, for the average person who doesn't know why they feel afraid and why they don't like what's going on, it's hard to explain, especially when the mainstream culture of the country is still dominated by people who stigmatize you as a racist for not being happy that this has been done to your country, right? So it's difficult to speak out about, and it's not clear who you'd speak out to, and it's not clear what you would even say. And so in spite of all that, it's still around half of the country that doesn't want any more immigration and wants millions of them to go home. So it is not that the British people, in a large percentage, don't want this to change. It's that the system is so big, Byzantine, and abstract, it's actually unclear what you would need to do if you are not a fully invested politico like I am, you know, like you are. You know, if you're not someone who studies this closely for a long time every day, it's not clear what the problem, what the origin of the problem is and what can be done to solve it.
Well, especially when you have things like the Brexit vote, which was very hard fought and won and was almost entirely, you know, the debate about it was about immigration. People voted for Brexit because they didn't want to be, you know, in hawk to the EU's demands for immigration. You vote, you do this incredible fight, you win, and then you get even more migrants. So, yeah, it's demoralization. It's sort of learned helplessness that, yeah, we'll let you vote. You can fight as hard as you want and then nothing will change. You want to try again? I mean, it's really a brutal demoralization campaign that's occurring. And as the Rape Gang Inquiry report notes, you know, this really the first domino to fall was 1948. And if you look at 1948, it was the Empire Wind Rush. It was the creation of the NHS, the creation of the Tavistock Institute. It's like that year alone was this massive generator of all of these institutions and organizations that have spent the last 70 years, you know, instituting this mindset in the people of England. So, I mean, how do you get out of it? If we're seven decades into this mind, you know, brainwashing, how do we climb our way out of it?
Honestly, it's really hard to say. Yeah. Since we haven't managed it yet, I'm not going to say that I have all the answers. But I mean, on the plus side, we are being recognized by the opposition now as important and influential figures, not just myself, but the what I guess we call the online right more broadly. And the party Restore Britain has come under relentless attack by the mainstream media because there's a by-election going on. And I mean, we're probably not going to win it, obviously, but I think we might have a fairly good showing in this election. The party's only 4 months old, so we've made really great strides in that 4 months. And they, I think, have become aware of it. I think they've been unable to not put us on the map in kind of the same fashion Trump did, actually, by the fact that they think, okay, well, we'll just attack him on the things he's offering. You may have seen the John Oliver Tonight video where he says, look at what Rupert Lowe's offering. And then he cuts to Rupert Lowe. He literally says this poisonous offering. Then he cuts to Rupert Lowe saying, we need to bring back Christian values of charity, duty, and forgiveness.
Oh, dear God,
and John
no.
Oliver cuts back and he's scoffing like, oh, spare me. It's like, sorry, that's a really wholesome message. That I really don't understand what you think the opposition to that is, John, but I think that speaks more to you than to anyone else.
Absolutely. And of course, as the independent puts it, Rupert Lowe is rapidly becoming the most dangerous man you've ever heard of, or never heard of, I guess, because they
want to. Them.
Yeah. Yeah. To them. Exactly. But it's very reminiscent of early coverage of Donald Trump, right? The most dangerous man out there. And I hope he is dangerous to them. I hope Rupert Lowe does exactly what he intends to do. We have about 2 minutes left. What do you want to tell people about Restore Britain and what is the solution being offered here? Because, again, the problem is so overwhelming. It's so ubiquitous. It's seemingly so deeply entrenched. You might read this and go, well, UK's lost. You know, if I was in the UK, I'd be like, well, I'm moving because it's just it's too late. What's the alternative? How do you regain your island nation?
Nothing's over. Actually, the one thing that we actually need to win is still in our hands. We still have the power of selection. We still are the overwhelming demographic majority, and we still have the choice of choosing politicians who are on our side and not the system side. If we get about 350 absolute patriots elected out of 650, well, Parliament is unbounded in a way that the US is not, or European constitutions aren't. People can point out and say, well, you know, you don't have a written constitution, therefore you don't have these certain protections. That's true, but also that means that Parliament is the sovereign of the kingdom. If we get a government of 350 people who know what the problem is, and have just had enough and are prepared to vote through whatever we want to vote through, well, we can fix it all. It's going to be very difficult. There's going to be a huge amount of resistance. But the potential is still there. Nothing is over. Nothing is lost. It's just bad. But things have been bad before. We're a very old country. I mean, it used to be that half the country was occupied by literal Vikings, right, raping and pillaging and ravaging their way across the nation. It's been worse. It's going to get better. Well, it's probably going to get worse, but it's going to get better afterwards. And in the end, we are going to win.
You know, you're right. And it's exactly like here in America. These problems aren't. They aren't real problems. You know, I always, you know, it's not like a hurricane that's coming and you just got to bunker down and deal with it. Actually, if you have the right people in office, it would be a simple matter of make this decision rather than that one. And it's done. Deport these people, send these people home, stop these boats from arriving. And it's really not an issue. The solution's actually simple. That is a very white pilling message and a very nice silver lining to the cloud. Carl Benjamin, find him at lotuseaters.com. That's lotuseaters.com. Incredible stuff, as always. Thank you for being with us.
My pleasure, man. Take care of yourself.
You too. Stay tuned, folks. Rex Jones.
Have the 250th birthday limited edition run of awesome designs for this July 4th, 2026 coming up. And they're now available to ship to you as of today, Monday, June 15th, 2026. And they'll be available only through July. They're limited edition. And then that's it. And they fundraise for the broadcast. But I got to say, I'm very impressed with the designs that Bigley came up with. I was heavily involved in this and the concepts like Praise the Lord and Pass the Ammunition with the Rattlesnake and the AR-15, Liberty or Death, 1776 to 2026. That is a really nice shirt. I designed this one, very simple. America 250 Years Strong. And these are just very clean, Americana, high-quality fabric, very comfortable. Destroying Tyranny since 1776. I did that concept. These are very, very clean. I'm proud of these. I think these are shirts everybody would want to wear. I would certainly want to wear these. America, Ride Fast, Live Free. Just a classic Betsy Ross flag. 1776 free. They came up with that. I think that's pretty cool. Defund the deep state. That's pretty cool. I like that really clean one right there. 1776, 250 years of freedom. They designed that. Very clean, very nice. So you want nice, clean, patriotic apparel that, you know, won't get you stabbed by a liberal, but other patriots will know who you are. You can kind of promote liberty and kind of identify who you are. It's fun to wear these shirts, I can tell you that right now. You kind of choose your own adventure. You wear an Alex Jones shirt, then you're really going to meet a lot of cool people, but you also might get a bottle smashed over your head. So, hundreds and hundreds of great designs from the Gulf of America to you name it. That's a good looking shirt right there at thealexjonesstore.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.